Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's podcast 503.
We've got a wonderful guest tonight at some point.
Maybe.
I mean, that's true. You never know. He could tell us he's ready to go, and suddenly someone could interrupt it with labor.
Yeah. And we know you're not running out and doing physical labor.
Oh, God, no.
Nor am I.
No, I mean.
Not right now. Only because it's, you know, getting dark.
It is getting dark.
Chilly.
I do. It's the temperature is supposed to drop the next 3 days. So
yeah. So we won't drop it like it's hot. But yes, tonight, any moment now. In fact, I think I see him popping into our green room. We're going to have our Music City Open champion in
Lazat.
Two-time.
Give the man some respect.
Well, yeah. Two-time pro tour, one-time non-pro tour. So he's technically a three-time, if we're really going to get technical.
I know. You're constantly disrespecting him on this podcast, and I'm sick of the Simon slander.
Well, I'm ready to say it to his face, and he's hopefully ready for it. Yeah. Looks like he's pretty ready to go. I think he can hear us. Either way, this man's always ready. We're going to welcome to the show Simon Lazat.
Hello, good evening.
Hey, buddy.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, yes.
We can.
Which
we
is
can.
Always a good thing. Perfect. Because without doing a little testing beforehand, it's always a flip of a coin on your side or ours.
Well, I'm glad it worked.
Yeah, so are
How's
we.
Going?
So, good, man. You, first of all, get it right out of the way. Congratulations. Big weekend. Here we are, 48 hours later, roughly.
I almost just put our podcast on from last year. Because with the two of the same winners, do we really need to rehash all of this? We're going to ask Simon the same thing. How did it go? He's going to be like, I didn't feel any different, but I shot better than everybody else. Thanks, Simon. See you later. Click.
All right. Well, I've got more original questions.
Okay, good.
But let's start with how does it feel? How much has it sunk in your home? How does it all feel?
It feels great. Awesome timing to get that win right before my big break, which is kind of open-ended. I'm not sure when I'm going to come back. It obviously all depends on how birth goes, how Natalia's doing, how the baby's doing. At the end of that list, at some point, how I'm doing. But yeah, I mean, how slow those first couple tournaments were for me, and kind of nothing was really going my way. And I'm starting to doubt things. And, you know, AB and Gannon Burr and a couple other younger players were just dominating the field on every freaking course, and yeah, a lot of doubts start creeping in your mind, like, am I still good enough, like, can I ever win again? Like, those are questions, of course, you ask yourself. So it was definitely a relief and a pretty cool feeling to just kind of cruise through that one and make sure that I remember and everyone else remembers, yeah, we're still there.
Well, I mean, a couple questions. One, even during the press conference, you flat out said, I don't know how long I can do this. Or What did you mean by that? Do you meant touring, playing? I mean, you literally signed a 10-year contract. I'm sure the MVP guys were probably going like, no, you can do this for like 8 more years, Simon. I think.
Least.
So what did you mean by that?
What I basically meant that leaving home is getting harder and harder every time I leave. And it's just kind of so heartbreaking, leaving my family behind over and over again. I know Terry's in the same boat pretty often, and he's managed a way to kind of do it. And I don't think everyone can do that. And I might be a person who is just not that easy for. Not saying that it's easy for Terry, because I'm sure there's struggles there too. But man, I like being home. I like being with family, and I love disc golf. But the whole travel aspect is just getting, I don't know, tiring might be the right word, exhausting, and just kind of very repetitive at this point. We've been going to the same stops for so many years now. It's always super nice and refreshing to have a new tour stop, in my opinion. And I've never been someone who really enjoyed this whole touring thing. Of course, I've learned a lot, and I would recommend anyone to travel when you get the chance. But this is my 11th year full time. To Terry, that's a very small number. But that's why I just had a thought. I don't know how much longer I can do these full tours. Of course, I'll always play disc golf. I love what I do still, and I love competing. But these full tours, maybe a handful more years. And I'm just pretty certain that once I can stop, I will stop.
So does that mean, do you think that means for you, rather than 4 or 5 weeks out on the road, it's maybe a 2-week stint? Like you do, for instance, we'll take this year, you do MCO and then Champions Cup, and then you go home for 2 or 3 weeks, and then you fly out and maybe hit Portland and Beaver State, and you come back for a few weeks. Like you really kind of, in the future, we're not talking anytime soon, hopefully, you just kind of make it more a smaller condensed tour, like a bunch of mini tours. Is that what you see? Or do you see Simon Lizotte regional pro?
Yeah, it's hard to say a bit because we have a baby coming in 2 days, and who knows what's going to change after that. But right now I'm kind of at a point where 2 weeks on tour is my max. I remember 2 years ago, 3 weeks was my max. So that already decreased by a week. And I'm already feeling now that I, on a 2-week trip, I'm like talking to my wife and I'm like, I don't know. I don't want to do these 2-week trips anymore. For me, it's great. If I can leave home on Wednesday, practice day Thursday, play the tournament, be home Monday, that is acceptable to me. Anything beyond that feels not great. I don't know.
Do you think maybe in, we'll say 2 years, things change because bringing an infant, never ideal. But do you think maybe you could travel with the family? Like, hey, guess what? We're all going to go to the Pacific Northwest and, you know, your youngest, which I don't know if you've announced boy or girl yet. Have you?
Girl.
Girl, okay.
Maybe. I was pretty quiet about this whole thing.
Smashbox anyway. Exclusive! We're going to call it an exclusive. Yeah. Simon's having a girl!
I've said it multiple times. It's a daughter.
Well, all right, whatever. But is the name Allison or Mackenzie?
We don't know. We're still debating the name because we have a name, but it's too similar to my brother's daughter's name, kind of. And then we don't know if we care about that or if we don't care about that. So we've been going back and forth.
I've got two cousins, Kaylee and Kylie. Yeah. And trust me, it was exactly. Miserable. You don't want that. So do you see in 2 years, like going out to the Pacific Northwest with like the family for 2 weeks, or, hey, we're going to hit Texas for 2 weeks or Florida for 2 weeks. Like, do you see that as an option until the kids? I mean, cause there's a small window before your oldest then gets into school and then it's summer vacation stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we've thought about it all. We've thought about buying a big RV and trying that, but that would probably be fun for a couple of weeks and then also kind of miserable. Taking kids on airplanes and rental homes. And I mean, when I'm playing tournaments, I'm going to be like super exhausted mentally and physically after all my rounds. And Natalia's going to be dealing with kids in a place she's not familiar with. And it's just never as fun and easy as it looks on paper doing trips with kids.
No, I totally get that. So my other question for you is there any part of you that's a little disappointed that you're not playing Champions Cup this weekend after now that you feel like you have like, oh, look, I stunk in the beginning of the season. I'm finally getting my mojo back. I Champions Cup would be awesome to play because maybe I can perform well there. Or do you not think that there is a rhyme or reason, so to speak, to your playing well? Do you are you the type of player that it's like, no, this week I played well, next week there's no I could take 52nd at Northwood Black and and just, you know, I'm happy to be home.
I mean, historically, you could probably say that if I win one week, you don't really know what's going to happen next week. I've never really been the most consistent guy out there or someone who really has really momentum, I think, from one tournament to the next. Sometimes I feel like I do, but then other times I don't. So I wouldn't say that there's an actual pattern in my disc golf game. Is there a part of me that's a bit sad? I think... probably no. Okay. If the tournament was at W.R. Jackson, probably a little bit. I definitely remember when, because at the beginning of this year, it was rescheduled a couple times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And relocated a couple times. Mm-hmm. And when it landed on this, I definitely was disappointed that I knew instantly, okay, I'm not going to play it. And playing Northwood Black four times also seems like a... no thanks for me.
Okay, that answers the question. Like if the course doesn't excite you, then I mean the chance, obviously there's always the chance at winning a major, which gets some players really excited, but if the course is kind of like then I mean enjoy the time off. Is as stressful as the next probably 3 days are going to be in some way or another, it's, you know, enjoy it while you can. Enjoy having a single kid as long as you can.
When it's all said,
little boy and his terrible twos.
Yeah. Yeesh. So if you don't mind, if we get into that, well, you know, you said right away during your awards, you know, your victory speech or interview. Sorry. Wow. When I'm not there, I don't even know what to call it. You were talking about how like Thursday's the day, clearly pre-planned and set up. You was even that decision of what day, obviously there's the physicality of what she's going through, but how did that conversation come about? And was there the thought of not even then being at MCO? Where like, did you book a ticket last moment even to go to MCO?
Well, the way dates are set is just the doctor kind of does the math, or I don't know exactly how the process works. Basically, Natalia just told me this is the date. And I was like, okay. okay. She said, that's what the doctor said. And what the doctor says is what we will do. I definitely offered Natalia to not play even Jonesboro. I was like, this 2 week trip is not necessary in my book. It's not necessary for me. If you want support here at home and help, I am totally cool with that. Cause I don't know, going to Arkansas again, it was like, I don't know, but, it is a very fun course, so I did end up going because basically Natalia convinced me to go. She told me, come on, I can do this. Do these two more tournaments, and then you're off. And she always believes that I will do better, and it'll be worth it.
Whereas okay, well,
I lack belief, but she did. So I know it's totally worth it now. Yeah, she was right.
You came home with a kick-ass guitar.
Such a cool guitar. Oh, man, when I first saw that guitar, I'm not really someone who goes to a tournament and is like, oh, my God, I really want to win, especially not for the trophy's sake.
Yeah.
But this is a different story. I saw it on Thursday morning, and I was like, damn, would that be nice to put that next to my other one?
For everyone that, like us, who know nothing about any musical instruments, explain, maybe break down like why you see that and what about it appeals to you. How is it different from the other one? Talk to us like we're guitar idiots, because we are.
Well, I'm a bit of a guitar idiot when it comes to electric guitars as well.
Okay.
So yeah. I don't know too much about these, but they're basically two different models that Gibson makes. Whatever that means, they're different body types and probably have different stuff on them.
Okay.
Basically, they just look different, and that one just looked so nice and clean to me. The model type is called a Les Paul,
mm-hmm.
which is an absolute classic mm-hmm. in the guitar world, and it's an extremely famous guitar, and have a custom Les Paul at home, I think is just pretty badass.
There is a Les Paul who has roots here and is same, from
the same guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Okay.
right here in Wisconsin, in Waukesha. So that's like 15 minutes from my house. Just last night, taking my daughter to volleyball, you take the Les Paul Highway. All obviously same guy. So all the roots and everything. But I don't know anything about the guitars.
Just that he invented the electric guitar. That's kind of what we all know about Les Paul.
So
he's one of the pioneers in electric guitar stuff.
Is that a trophy then? You know, obviously you've had the successes there, and we talked about it at the top of the show. You won that event when it was actually a B tier back in the day, obviously back to back here now. Is that an event that would ever get old, or a trophy that would ever get old, is getting these various models of guitar year after year? Would you ever be like, okay, now I have six of them. Like, I don't need any more. Like, would that ever
Partridge
get
Family?
Yeah. Or do you want to just keep racking them up?
I would love to keep racking them up. I don't think it could be a much cooler thing to collect as the coolest trophy in our sport.
Okay. Okay.
Do you think, for you, is there a, like, you must have thought about this, like, what other kind of cool trophies, like an awesome pool stick, you know, a really cool ball rack for pool or something? I mean, I'm trying to think of something darts related, maybe an awesome dartboard. Are those things that you could see as cool trophies for you particularly, or do you have a different idea?
I think you nailed it, and I've actually never thought about that.
Oh, I didn't like, I just think of like what for you particularly, I'm sure every player has an idea of like what they do. Like, you know,
if you're
like
a good
Eagle with his custom, what,
Kendama
ball and thing like that could be kind of cool. But I suppose like a dartboard could be really cool depending on how it is.
It could be really cool.
I think the challenge is, just like we saw at last year in Rochester 2 years ago, is when you make a connection, like, obviously this makes sense, Music City, guitars, you know, all that stuff. If you go outside of something that's not maybe regional and you just go to something else cool, then a lot of people will have a hard time making any kind of connection if there's not that semi-obvious connection. Like, we're, you know, mm-hmm. just, I mean, like, if you got a, I don't know, a crazy bowling pin from here in Wisconsin in a Milwaukee-based event, that wouldn't be crazy, knowing that bowling was headquartered right here in Milwaukee for, you know, decades. But when if you go outside of some of those and you just can't, you get the coolest pool cue in the world, but you're playing some tournament in New Mexico, like, people would be like,
Yeah, I mean, it has to associate with the city.
Yeah, I think every city has something that it associates with.
Mm-hmm. I think we could probably find a city or two that likes beer or has beer associations. I've heard you
enjoy.
I've actually barely been drinking this year.
Yeah, okay.
It's been a very, very easygoing year for me, and just according to my doctor, he said, if I can drink less, I should drink less. And I've actually barely had anything to drink this year.
Doctors always say that.
Then, I was going to say, I feel like doctors are always that downer, though. I think they say it to everybody, right?
Yeah, but I have like a bit elevated cholesterol.
Okay.
Which, and? And apparently animal products and alcohol and stuff like don't help.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's actually nice. It's actually really nice to not want to have a beer every day.
Yeah. No, I'll say it. I'm with you. Like at the beginning of the year, we have free soda at work at my office. So anytime I want, I can walk over and get a can of Coke. No problem. I was drinking way too much. And so this is the beginning of the season or the beginning of the year. I just kind of said, I'm done. I'm going to go a year without drinking Coke. Just not going to do it at work or at home. We don't have it at home. So it is kind of nice. It takes you a while to not think about it. Because I walk by that fridge every day. Like, hey, there it is. I could just grab one. Like, no. And at some point, you just kind of, you don't even think about it
self-control.
Anymore.
Self-control. Yeah. Explain for everyone, you know, here we are. We're seeing you at these events. Obviously, now you're about to take time off. Your life is going to take a very different, turn, all for the good and continue to flourish. But what is like a typical week like when you're not necessarily competing? What has that been like? What's your year been like? I mean, you just talked about a couple of health habits and some things you're going through in the time with the family. Pull back the curtain. What does that look like for you on a, we'll say a typical week where maybe you're not playing?
So an off season week and kind of a week between events is pretty different. Mm-hmm. In the off season, I have like a pretty set schedule with going to the gym, doing some putting practice, and spending time with family and stuff. It's much more organized because I have like so many weeks in a row where I need to get stuff done. And the weeks between tournaments is a bit kind of open because my wife's a stay-at-home mom. When I'm home, I don't really have quote-unquote a real job. So we can kind of do kind of whatever we want, and it's all mostly spontaneous. And I just try to do as much as possible with my son when I'm home, like take him to some kids events like library and little gym, swimming, you know, all those stuff you do with toddlers. And if I don't get sick during that week, that's a bonus because usually you get sick when you start doing kid stuff. Yeah, and when we're home, when the weather is a bit crappy, I play some pool when I have a chance, or some darts, or just play with my son, or we watch some movies. Normal stuff, like nothing out of the ordinary, I think.
What I guess maybe then, at what point does it turn into any form of MVP or sponsor collaboration, development, media? You know, when do those obligations come about, and how intense are those?
It's also not really scheduled. That's one of my biggest struggles and something I probably need to change in the upcoming years is to have like some kind of working hours where I'm like, mm-hmm. This is when I'm doing emails and business stuff, taking phone calls or meetings, whatever. Because Andrew is my contact at MVP. I'll call him almost on a daily basis, randomly kind of, or he'll call me and we'll just talk about new stamps coming, new disc molds, new ideas, or whatever, you know, whatever. And that's one of the biggest frustrations that Natalia has with me, that she like never knows when I'm on the phone, if it's a business phone call or an important phone call or just something, just like a friend, or we're just blabbering.
Mm-hmm.
So she like never knows when I'm working, cause I could just be on my phone working, or I could be on my phone just scrolling through useless stuff. And, yeah, we don't really have a routine or a schedule with anything, which, I think we should probably change because it brings up a couple frustrations here and there when we don't know when I'm doing what or who's supposed to do what at what time.
Yeah, I can understand that, because when disc golf is your life, whether it's playing or doing media or having these obligations with such a large sponsorship partnership that you have with MVP, it all kind of blends together. And for someone like you, I would assume as someone like me, it doesn't necessarily always feel like work, but it when you add it all up, it takes up a lot of your time. And then if it's scattered throughout a 16-hour time frame, others have no idea what is going on and how crucial that it is. So I could understand you looking for a little bit more also structure.
It's also hard to say a bit like what's my job when I'm home, or like when I'm not practicing, becoming better at disc golf. Sometimes I define my job as listening to a disc golf podcast. Mm-hmm. That's part of my job. I'm working as I'm listening to a podcast because I'm learning about recent events or statistics or whatever disc golf podcasts talk about. And I feel like I need to know about that stuff because I'm not doing the research myself. Or when I'm scrolling through Instagram, seeing what the other pros are doing, is that mm-hmm. working, or am I just being bored and looking at through my phone?
Yeah, and it's funny because I remember when I felt like at one point Facebook was consuming so much of my time. This is, you know, a decade ago. And I had created a second profile where I've dedicated that to disc golf. And I really genuinely thought, well, no, if I'm learning that, well, Simon's having a kid and it's a boy or whatever, or a girl. And like when I'm learning these things, that's going to make me a better interviewer. That's going to make me do my job better overall. And it's not just doom scrolling or scrolling for the heck of it. And I, even to this day, I kind of feel like, am I learning stuff when I'm scrolling? Sometimes you get caught up in the weeds, right, of the really dumb stuff that you don't need. But lots of times it's helpful because when someone says, oh, I don't know, Hannah Wynn's not playing this week. And I'm like, oh, yeah, she's at a concert in Vegas with Chris Clemens. Like, then you just know that because you paid attention to their socials. So it's a funny balance like that.
It's the reason I tell my wife, like, all weekend when I have disc golf on the TV from basically 9 a.m. to 5 or 6 p.m., I kind of just be like, well, I kind of have to know this. It's part of my job. It's part of what it makes me a better, you know, at the podcast. And she looks at me, she goes, really? Like, your side gig? And I'm like, okay, maybe, but.
So with all of that we just said, 2024 has been, of course, exciting and electric and all of these things. What to you has been the most, some of the standout moments so far in early 2024 so far? And this could be anything, anyone, any division, anything, anywhere. What kinds of things stand out to you in 2024?
I really enjoyed watching AB win for the first time. Because we've all been waiting for that moment and we knew what was going to come afterwards. I mean, we've been talking about it for many years and, hats off to AB that he's actually doing what everyone thought he was going to do when the seal rips or breaks, or however you say that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was nice. Enjoyed that one. Watching Niklas get his first win was awesome as well. I might have cried. Don't remember.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Very cool seeing that. What else has happened? The problem is that everything's a blur to me. So many things are going on.
Okay, well, let's, because I know your friends, obviously you have your international component to it and you're friends with them, but on the FPO side, the parity, the fact that we, you know, at one point had five different winners in five different events, Kristen finally just became a repeat winner, so to speak, in 2024. But what do you make of, we'll say, the international component of our FPO division this year in particular, the Evelinas and so on and so forth?
I mean, it's killer. I think what's happening to the FPO now with the internationals, quote unquote, taking over is going to happen in the MPO sooner than later, or hopefully soon-ish, maybe in the next 3 to 5 years. Because anyone who's ever been to Finland knows if you go to disc golf course, who's out there playing. It's 13 to 15 year old kids and they all throw better than all of us. So one day we'll have a bunch of 18 to 25-year-old Finns who are Niklases, and hundreds, maybe thousands of them. And that's going to change the game, in my opinion.
Do you feel like with that, and I completely can see that happening as well, in how it's, to me, it's going to feel like just like a herd of players just show up and they're like, oh, like, we're here.
Like one season, suddenly it's like, why is there 12 or 14 Finns?
All in the top 20 at an event. Do you feel like when that happens in the next 10 years, will they all be coming to the U.S.? Will the U.S., do you feel like, will still be kind of the end goal as opposed to maybe having their big name and being impressive in Finland and Europe, but the U.S. will be kind of the destination where they have to still officially prove themselves? Or do you feel like Finland and other places will catch up?
I'm not sure. there's a small part of me that thinks there's a chance. I don't know how big of a chance, but I think there is a chance that the main tour might move to Europe. Almost all of it. Which is hard to think about right now because 99% of pros are Americans. Mm-hmm. But I think when we're talking about big sponsorships and real big events with TV coverage and kind of that next level gallery slash event running that we've been dreaming of for many years. And we already see it here and there, kind of. Mm-hmm. But I think that the European market, talking about more of the Nordic countries like Sweden, Finland, Estonia, etc., I think there's a chance that they will find that next level. And I'm not sure that America can find that next level the way Europe could. And that might change a lot. I don't know if this is going to happen or when, but I think there's a chance that that might happen and that then there's going to be some switch. I don't know if it's going to be a complete switch or just like a 50-50 split between the tours or if there's going to be multiple tours. I don't know.
Damn. I'm like not that, good at that's a big stuff. Statement. And I guess I'd follow that up with my little exposure of being over there for a few events in the last 5 years. I think of a Ford who we've seen, Ford cars and trucks, whatever, who we've seen at Tunney, who we've seen at the European Open, like obviously Kristen and Porsche specifically this year, Air Baltic this year over in Estonia with Kristen. When I think of those brands, I think of how big those brands are. And I think BMW or Mercedes has been involved with some of the events over there. Is that who you're kind of looking at and saying, hey, some of these people might drop a few million euros and then be contenders for the Premier Tour?
I'm not necessarily talking about any brand specifically. Okay. It could be a car brand. It could be any drink or
sure.
any big brand who sponsors big sporting events. I'm not
okay.
too familiar with how all that works and who does what. I just think that with the attention disc golf gets in these countries and how different it's looked at as like an actual real legit sport. Mm. And not something you just go play for free with your friends and have a beer. It's just going to be different. And I really, really hope I get to go to the European Open and to the European Disc Golf Festival this year to see if everything I heard is true. Okay, and then World Championships next year. I actually had a pretty long phone call with UC a couple weeks ago. And that's going to be the most next level disc golf event we've ever seen. That's going to be really exciting.
Which one?
And maybe a huge milestone for the sport. 2025 World Championships.
The 2025. Okay.
Yeah. To reword what I think you're saying is disc golf over there, like our what's a small pebble thrown into a giant ocean here being disc golf. Getting thrown is nothing. And when you go over there, like disc golf is a large rock being thrown into a much smaller pond. And we make a bigger splash as a sport over there in many of those countries. Is that essentially what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, it's just different. It's hard to, mm-hmm. It's actually almost crazy to try to compare the US with European countries. It almost makes no sense because they're so vastly different in size and population. It's just a totally different thing. You can't really compare the two places. Like people always ask me, how do you compare the US to Germany? Like that question itself doesn't really make much sense because they're just so fundamentally different in every way, especially the size. Like Germany is barely the size of one state. Mm-hmm. It's just a whole different concept of country.
Simon, you can elaborate, but just going to a Tuesday night league night, so to speak, or a mini or whatever they call it in some of these countries, whether it was when I was in Estonia or in Finland or wherever, like it's just a completely different much more serious, much more professional vibe. Like all of it, it just feels different. The way people approach disc golf in a lot of those countries, and I, of course, I don't have, you know, years of experience being there and seeing it. It's just, it all feels very different and much more elevated.
Which honestly isn't necessarily what a lot of people want here.
Correct.
Like right? the weekend league or the weekday league night, Tuesday night league, a lot of people do want to show up. Maybe have a
party,
have a beer beforehand, play with, you know, the four discs and the plastic bag and, you know, shoot your cool. I shot under par. Let's yeah. go. Now let's go out to the bar and have another drink. Like that's
or six
or yeah. whatever. That's what a lot of our leagues are, because it's more. So it might be more socially minded here versus over there. I don't know. I haven't been over there yet.
That's a whole different question. If we even want this golf to change like this, that is a whole different question that is hard to think about.
Yeah. And I think we'll continue to see, you know, these differences grow as players and students. And like you said, 12 and 13 and 15 year olds are going, like they're getting done with school at 2 or 3 o'clock. And then they're going and legitimately practicing for 2 to 6 hours every day after school as a club sport. Like they're just like growing up differently even than how everyone's being treated here.
Yeah. I was going to say, we have that, just not in that concentration. You know, you might have a handful of kids all throughout our country, which, as Simon says, legitimately much bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
That you know, that we have. Look, I mean, you're Gannon Burr, who's been playing since he's been like 10 years old or whatever, 8 years old. I don't know. And you know, he's clearly a phenom. Just he's built for it. It's a perfect body type. He has everything you need. It's just different.
Yeah, but when there's 50 Gannons mm-hmm. coming out of Finland or Sweden soon, it won't be as much of an anomaly.
I hope so, but we've been saying it for 10 years as well, though.
And they're coming.
And yet, I think they are. I'm just saying, like, it's. I feel like what Simon was saying, moving over, like, will the tour move over there? I don't think the tour will move over there until we see a large portion of those players hit like 1040. You have to have a group like there. Otherwise, we're going to be a bigger market. The U.S. is always going to be the bigger market. We're going to look at them and go like, yeah, that's cool. It kind of feels like Manabu. Yeah, you're 1050, but when you come over here, you're really 1020. Like that's what we think here. And I'm not throwing shade at Manabu by any means. But that's how the U.S. will look at it. And that's just the nature. Until they can come over here and beat our best players, we have. The U.S. has an attitude, and I'm not saying it's better or worse, but yeah. That's just how we look at things.
What excites you most? Maybe you have details, maybe you don't, but what excites you most about the international component of being in Finland for Worlds next year and the Estonian Disc Golf Festival and all those things? What are some of the things that excite you specifically?
I'm really excited for the galleries. That's always a huge plus when you're actually playing, and it feels like it's a sporting event
mm-hmm.
and not just your local 100 to 300 people, local disc golfers come out and watch because you happen to be in town. It's going to be, let's just talk about the 2025 Worlds. It's going to be one of the first, I don't know historically all the numbers of world championships on how many countries are competed. I know that in the recent years, probably also largely because of COVID, of course, it's been very, very few countries. And I've been to multiple European championships where we have like 30 plus countries as the European championships. And then we go world championships and there's like 8 countries competing.
Sure.
Which is always very sad. So I'm really looking forward to probably the biggest international disc golf event of all time. I don't know how many countries will show up for the 2025 Worlds, but it's going to be a number disc golf has never seen before.
Yeah. And again, I think that's obviously based on a lot of just the sheer geography. I mean, the fact that we're hosting a B tier in Thailand and we get, you know, 18 countries or 21 countries
because
they're all so tiny and so close, but it's going to be the most diverse worlds we have ever seen. Do you think players that are long shots, longer shots at winning? And I'll say your 10 tens and below. Do you think we'll see a lot of them not maybe go because it'll be cost prohibitive or anything like that, or maybe how many U.S. players will get shut out because they're going to open up internationally. How do you think that response is going to be from the U.S.?
I mean, I think most people are very excited that it's finally not in the U.S. I mean, because I feel like this golf is at a point now where it kind of the biggest event we have in our sport, the World Championships, that's what it's called. It should not be hosted in the same country every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of think for the last 15 to 20 years, we've kind of been waiting for that moment where a European country steps up and gets the bid or is just ready to host an event of that size. And I think I don't know how it will work with how many spots countries will get. Like, I think every country will get a specific number of players that they're even allowed to send to Worlds. I think we'll have two courses, so we're going to have like 200 something players probably. And the US is obviously going to get the majority of the slots, maybe half of them. So let's say 120 people are allowed to go, something like that. And I think those 120 spots will fill up extremely easily. But there's obviously a lot of people who want to go who are not going to get to go.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see. International always has gotten kind of the first wave of invites, so to speak. That happens at Am Worlds and Junior Worlds and so on and so forth. Even some of our big A tiers, you know, the Memorial, we'll use that as an example, opens up to international players first. And they're going to have a tougher than ever balancing act.
Is that going to be the case for 2025 Worlds when it is overseas, though?
I'll be interested.
Well, the way European Championship does it is that every country gets an allotment of players they're allowed to sign up. And like Finland would get like 25, Germany would get like 8, Sweden would get 15. Like, it basically just, I don't know how they do it, but I wonder if they're going to do it like that.
That's what I mean. Is Worlds traditionally isn't, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Worlds specifically isn't necessarily based on some of those same criteria. So again, we got a ways to worry before we have to really worry about it. But
personally, I hope they kind of just open it up. To start with, 75 U.S. players. Bring your actual, like, tour, quote unquote, tour card touring players. The men and women, and we're just talking MPO right now, because obviously we've got probably 20 to 25 FPO as well in for the U.S. at least. But 75 MPO players, that there's the U.S. Now let's open it up to the rest of the international. And if it doesn't fill, cool, guess what? The rest of you can come from the U.S. But to be honest, I know it sounds silly. You're 10, 15 rated player from the U.S. You don't need to go. Like,
no, they have a long shot at winning.
Agreed. Yes. If you're not invited, too stinking bad. I'd rather see a 1,010 rated player from Finland than a 10-18 player from the U.S. You know, somewhere around there. Even if they have less of a chance. So yeah.
Again, things we don't have to worry about. Everyone's going to complain about it eventually. So we'll save that for a podcast like 6 months from now when all of this gets announced, and then everybody can be up in arms because everyone's going to have a different view about how it should have went down. You just mentioned, though, talking to UC, lots of different things, I'm sure, when you think about the international play and the travel and things of that nature. MVP is not part of the House of Dis, which obviously was a very big thing within our sport in the last couple of years. Do you have any input as to how you feel like that's gone down? I mean, we just saw an announcement that Dynamic is absorbing a lot of the Discmania people. They recently just announced that they're shutting down Discmania warehousing in Colorado, and that impacts a lot of people. How do you feel about the overall concept of House of Dis and what it's meant for our sport?
Terry, I'm the total wrong guy to ask when it comes to business and finances. I am so absolutely uneducated and uninterested almost.
Okay.
I don't know what House of Discs does or how they function or who runs it or why. I literally don't care. And the second I first heard of them, I stopped reading after the first sentence because I knew I wasn't going to be interested. And it's just something I don't have to worry about. And I totally do not worry about and have never looked into. And totally, when anyone talks to me about it, I just don't pay attention. And I have no idea what House of Discs is or does.
Interesting.
Honestly, I've heard people talk about it. I know that they're a big company that bought other companies. Mm-hmm. But what that actually means and what they actually do, I have no clue.
So there's something to be said then with you saying all of that, which I can understand and respect. There's something to be said about you knowing your check is coming, your weekly or monthly checks are signed by MVP who are not part of it. And as far as you're concerned, that sounds good to you, right? Just doesn't matter.
I don't even know what the difference would be if they were part of House of Discs.
Okay. All right. Like, I guess we won't.
Would that make a difference for me or no?
It could. And here's why. Yes, your checks might be the same and they're still coming. However, it might matter if there's this friendly collaboration of you and some other brands, and maybe you look more favorably upon a co-brand in Castoplast, or it's still in Discmania, a company you just left. Like, yeah, in some ways, maybe minor or major, I feel like your attitude would be slightly altered in even the slightest of ways if you were under the same umbrella. Because technically, like, you're just that. You're under the same umbrella.
Well, I mean, this weekend, Chris,
some cohesion.
Chris and Tatar was hanging out at the DD booth signing discs.
Yeah.
I mean, that is,
you know, Latitude, Westside, and DD have been, you know, kind of a core group for a while now, but... Yeah, when you factor in, like I said, a Discmania, who's them and Castoplast are all getting shipped out of Emporia now, like, yeah, there's things that go with that.
I think
that.
Simon's eyes just glazed over.
And that's fine, and I don't think he goes on it anymore.
No, quick question. Is this topic of House of Discs being, like, a good thing or a bad thing? Is that, like, 50-50 split in how people think, or is it pretty clear if it's good or not?
I don't think it's 50-50. I think because of the culture of our sport, I would lean it more maybe 60-40 that people are very weary of it. People are very weary of the large corporation coming in, gobbling up these small ones. Cool. Guess what? Now they're going to get rid of Castoplast and those discs are going to go over to Discmania, and then Discmania discs are going to get changed to whatever. And they all have the same plastic. And I'm just repeating things that I've read on the internet. I think it's like a 60-40 that a lot of people are very nervous and very much weary of this large organization coming in to gobble up disc golf when it was at its peak, and whether or not that looks good now, 2 years later, as we've kind of hit a plateau. I don't know. I just think it's part of our culture in the US, at least, to look at this as big corporation, scary
venture capitalists that, you know, may not be involved with disc golf, but are only looking at bottom lines, where cuts happen, you know, and worrying about profitability, mm-hmm. maybe over partnerships and friendships and maybe a little more laid back atmosphere. And now there's people that are, you know, mm-hmm. just a little more like, hey, let's look at these numbers.
People are actually adding up the numbers now. It's crazy.
Yeah. So I think who knows where the perception is. It might even be 70-30 in terms of people not loving the idea. And it kind of goes against our culture of, like, a little bit more laid back, hippie.
Grassroots.
I mean, think
of MVP and Innova and Discraft and Legacy. Like,
these families,
these garages that started printing these discs. And now we have we've got the people over in Sweden who have these state-of-the-art manufacturing. And this company was like, cool, that looks good. Let's buy them. Like, it's just a different idea. And I don't know. I'm not personally 50-50 on it. It doesn't affect us. It doesn't affect me yet. We'll see when things really start to,
when they buy us out, it will.
Oh my God. If they're going to give us a big contract, I'm all here for it. Let me tell you how great Discmania is.
All right. Simon. All right. So back to, so we'll go business adjacent to you, MVP, and projects. What can people be excited about? Tell us about you know, what's been released that's going well, but also tell us kind of what's in the pipeline for you.
Well, we're working right now on obviously like a special edition disc that I just will get for my win this weekend. Mm-hmm. Those are always special. Some nice, cool artwork with a disc that is in some way related to the win, which may or may not be the putter I was using, because it worked very well last weekend. Other than that, what else is coming? The Simon line will be growing this year, and we're working on my mid-range. So we'll have the 12-speed, my putter, and then we'll have a mid-range.
Okay.
That I probably shouldn't say too much about that. I don't have prototypes yet, so I don't really know what it's going to be like. But
I was just going to say, what do you want it to do? What do you, well, like when you're designing and thinking about the mid-range, what are some of the characteristics and things that you're really looking to accomplish with it?
I want it to be reliable, consistent.
Feel good in the hand.
Holds any line I put it on.
Exactly. The classic catchphrases and every, you know.
Yeah.
No, it's going to be great. It's going to be okay, let me say this. It's going to be, you don't even know MVP molds. It's going to be like between the reactor and pyro, if that says anything to you.
Damn, yeah. I like it.
Phenomenal disc.
Yeah, I mean, okay, and then, good for all, you know, anyone can throw it, you know, from any amateur to beginner, all arm speeds, great for forehands and backhands, good for hot weather and cold weather,
awesome for tailwinds or headwinds,
great for aces, and great for birdies too, if you like those, like, it's, yeah, and Simon approved.
Also phenomenal artwork, of course, and cool name.
Okay.
All those things. I hope I'm also going to get a fairway driver. I'm not sure if that's going to happen this year, maybe early next year. Making discs is a shockingly long process. I'm sure you guys know. Mm-hmm. But from the first idea to the finished product is many, many months of waiting, trial and error, and kind of production. Anyway, and then we're working on a Simon Line apparel as well. That's also kind of taking longer than we wanted, but that's just always how things go, of course. Anything else business related that we're working on? I don't know. I'm Terry. I'm having a baby in 2 days. I don't know what's happening anymore.
your brain's like baby mush or food. I get it.
Is she sleeping right now? Is your wife sleeping right now? Is she in bed? She should be.
I do not know. When I went to my computer, she was not sleeping.
Okay.
So I'll just
guess would be no.
I'll tell you, I've been keeping this one in my back pocket since January there. And I'm thinking about, there's a whole line of them. There is a street sign or street signs in, on the island of Samui. And one of them, a road sign, very much resembles your logo and your branding. And I'm going to be busting that out and putting out. I got Missy Gannon references. I've got some Dutch Napier references. All sorts of stuff I found. But one of them I'm going to be busting out because it's eerily similar to your branding. How much of this stuff is
still... You know my logo is based on a traffic sign, right?
No, I don't think I did know that.
Oh, I made a whole video about it. Obviously, you don't watch my YouTube channel. So
no, I love it. I'm your 201,000 subscriber.
Yeah, it was like episode 132, Terry. Duh. Shut up.
On a traffic sign out of Thailand?
Germany. Yeah, my logo is based on a German traffic sign.
Oh, okay.
And well, maybe they use it in Thailand, too. I don't know.
They must. I'll send you a picture of it, and then I'm going to make a post about it. But anyway, I did not know that. What... how much of all that does this excite you? I mean, you know, there's the golf world, but how much of this development, brand development, excites you still?
It's really exciting. Yeah, that was one of the main reasons I accepted this whole switch of brands, was that I had a chance to make my own line of discs and do kind of a rebrand, because, I mean, what I was doing with Ismania was also still exciting and fun, but man, doing something completely new after 10 years of Mania. Stop, new chapter. You know, we've talked about it enough. It's it just felt like the right time, the right place. And MVP gave me this opportunity, and I was like, that sounds extremely fun. I'm in. Let's go.
I know you're not all too probably hung up on the exact timing of it, but do you have a, you know, a kind of a timeline of here's what I'd like to have out by my fourth year or by my sixth year or eighth year? Have you guys planned out that far ahead necessarily, or is this kind of going as quick as things can year by year?
Yeah, or it's kind of going as quick as things can year by year. The first plan was to have one of my the first disc ready by the time of my announcement that I'm joining MVP. That would have been the ideal thing, but that ended up taking about 9 months longer than we planned. So yeah, you know, with production stuff, and it's never as easy as it should be.
What has been maybe the most exciting? I know I asked about most exciting thing in 2024, but what's blown you away the most from the MVP family and diehards and, you know, and supporters and all that stuff? Like what has shocked you the most or stuck out at you?
Oh, that's such a hard question, man. What has shocked me the most?
Are the fans any more crazy or enthusiastic or ways people reach out to you or ideas or collaborations? Like, has anything been like, damn, this is really new territory? Has there been anything like that?
Not really.
Okay.
When can we expect to see, and I'm going to make an assumption that we're going to see an awesome pixel for the MCO back-to-back win, and I think it's going to have Simon with each guitar back to back. Yeah, that's the stamp in my brain. That's in my brain.
Very 80s.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want to see like 80s hair band, like maybe Kiss makeup on him too.
Yeah, exactly.
But when can we expect?
That's a pretty good idea.
Write it down.
I'm here. MVP, if you do that, I'm here. When can we expect to see it? Because I think I've decided I want to start a small putter collection in my backyard. I want to buy 5 discs from like a bunch of different manufacturers. I've got 5 Steady BLs. I've got 5 Pures. I think I want to get 5 Pixels and throw them in my backyard because I want to have like a putting selection. I want to be able to try a lot of different things. So when can we expect to see these, Simon?
I don't want to say anything wrong right now.
About when, like estimated time, like I'm not expecting a date. Is it 3 weeks from now?
It is, as far as I know, it is most likely this week.
Okay, that's good enough. Like, if it happens next week, no one's counting. You know, nobody's watching our show. Don't worry.
Well, the thing with a tournament, like a disc that is in honor of a tournament win, it really only hits right if it was recent.
Mm-hmm.
And, in the past, we've kind of struggled with that. So this time, we really wanted to make sure that within at least a handful of days, we have something where the fans can be like, yeah, this just happened. Here's the disc. Let's go. Support.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, clearly a better idea than waiting till after somebody wins Champions Cup and all the shine is off of you. And suddenly we're like, oh, my God, look who won.
Yeah, the waiting is not always voluntarily. Sometimes,
of course,
it's just tough to come up with a couple thousand discs on the spot. Especially the last couple of years for MVP have been pretty insane. So,
if you guys would stop doing amazing things, it would be easier for them.
Yeah, no kidding. Just slow down. Then they can catch up, right?
I mean, the good thing is, as you're stepping off the stage, Eagle's stepping right on. Like, hello, Champions Cup. Like, you know, MVP's not missing a beat.
I was so excited to see Eagle last week and watch him play with the new discs. And obviously he was more than excited as well. He's been waiting on that moment for many months now at this point. So it was a huge bummer. We actually stayed together in an Airbnb and we both had back pain and we were just laying on the couch like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday Thursday, I tried playing a practice round and I got through 8 holes and then walked off the course because I was like, I can't throw. But then with the tournament adrenaline, I like got myself to the course, did some warm ups with Seth, and it ended up working out. And Eagle was just like, because I knew after this, I'm taking a long break. And for Eagle was, no, after this, I'm starting my tour. Mm. So he chose to drop out. I chose to play. And then we obviously saw what happened to my game. It was absolutely unexplainable and weird, but awesome. Very fun. And I mean, really excited to see Eagle play on Thursday. I'll have about a 5-hour-old baby, and I'll be watching Disc Golf Network.
Yeah, make sure to bring an iPad for the hospital room because they probably don't stream.
I really hope he's on some featured card. I really want.
Oh, he's going to be. I guarantee it. I could probably look right now. I'm sure I'm sure I've got the rundown in my email from Mo. I guarantee you, if it's his first event, they are going to highlight him and put the pressure on him. I do have actually surprisingly a question about MCO. As much as we've danced around the whole tournament, what do you equate a lot of people, I guess, are calling it the throwback lead card, Paul, Simon, Ricky, like, and none of you guys are washed up by any means, but everyone's calling you the old guard. You've got AB, you've got Gannon, you've got these young guns. Why was the MCO a flashback to 2017? Was it the course? Was it just all the stars aligning? What happened?
It's funny. I've listened to a couple of podcasts since then, and obviously the commentary and stuff. And I think I've heard flashback to like 5 different years at this point on when this flashback is to 17. I like that one though. I was wondering why this course doesn't really make sense to me, because it seems like it was such a thrower's course. Mm-hmm. The wind was relatively down. Final round was a bit breezy, but it really, I don't know what freaking zone I was in or why it felt so easy to me. But for me, it felt like every hole was just like you throw a pretty simple shot to the landing zone. The fairways were really large for our standards. And then you throw a big hyzer to the basket. Like that felt like most of the par fours were like that. So I was very confused. I knew I played really well round one. But after that, I was just kind of cruising and everyone else just kind of struggled. I couldn't really explain why. It didn't really make sense.
AB last week on our show called this a placement course. He's like, you have to hit your placement and then you go from there. And I was thinking, based on what he had said, I wonder if that's why. I wonder if, you know, you and Paul and Ricky just understand the limits, so to speak, of what you want to do. And you're not trying to push hard. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if you told me AB and Gannon were trying to get 50 feet further than you guys. I don't know if that's true, but it wouldn't shock me, as opposed to just saying, I'm going to take this. Because Paul didn't look like he had his best backhand. His forehand looked amazing.
The problem was that there was nothing really to gain with distance on this course. Like every hole, you could throw basically a putter or a mid off the tee and have just as good as a birdie chance as if you go kind of risky or a more power driver off the tee. And that's what I did. I think I threw on like a third of the hole. I just threw a mid. Great. That's it. That's all you had to do. And then you had left like 350, 400 foot hyzer. So I don't know. I kind of enjoyed the course. We also have to say that the wind was basically best case scenario. Like if it came like from the perfect direction to kind of help on every hole, like every hole where you like needed a bit of a helping wind, that wind help was there to help. I think if the wind was a different direction, this course would have played completely different.
Yeah. I think about the group that you guys had, and to me, if you guys were playing an older course that took many, we'll say a Maple Hill, where some people just kind of know how to navigate around it and there's nuances to it, I don't know that that was the case out there. Like you just said, it was, you know, you had to just throw a couple of controlled shots. maybe it was just a time. I feel like the stars just aligned to kind of answer your question. It just kind of seemed like that's the way it was. How did you feel about the group? Did you even think at all about who you were surrounded by and who was doing well that weekend? Or could you just take... Did it matter?
Did it make you more comfortable in that final round to have your... I don't want to say your buddies, but the guys you've been playing with for 8-10 years on the card with you?
In a sense, yes. Not really because they're my buddies, but more like having Chris and Paul on the card gave me some sense of feeling like they're not really the players that are shooting super hot this year. So I guess it gave me a bit of confidence that it didn't seem super likely that they were just going to go off because that's just what they're doing that year. I was pretty worried about Gannon, but Gannon very early in the round got a bit unlucky and missed basically every putt. So I think within like 3 or 4 holes, I had like an 8-stroke lead over Gannon. So that whole dynamic changed pretty quick. And I mean, if things are going your way on disc golf courses, then things are just going your way.
Yeah,
I've seen it so many times. Actually, this route specifically, I was actually wondering if I'm going to make a YouTube video about this because there were a handful of shots where I threw a very similar shot to Paul or Chris or Gannon, but I got the good break and they got the bad break. That happened multiple times in the front nine. And it just goes to show it's literally a game of inches. You can throw the same shot twice and get crazy different results, or sometimes even just a couple feet results. But a couple feet can make a big difference, especially if you're 25 or 35 feet from the basket.
Yeah, it didn't hurt that you were hitting every putt as well. And even putts you shouldn't be hitting were going in, as opposed to like when we watched Paul drain flat. I mean, I don't call spit putts very often because I think that in general, usually if a putt comes out, it probably wasn't ideal. But there was like a 60 footer Paul hit and just it spit right back out at him. You could see it hit the pole. It came back, and then you throw one from your knee to the right side, barely catches chain, kind of balances on the edge and then circles in, and you could see it on your face. You almost looked guilty. Like, I got away with one.
Yeah, when that spit out on hole 11 that Paul had from 60 feet, like when that happened, that was the moment where I was certain that I was going to win. I mean, I should have been certain earlier because I should have that confidence that I'm going to protect a 6 or 7 stroke lead. But at that point I was just like, wow, the disc golf gods really want me to win today. Like, I already felt like they wanted me to win, but that smack in the face, I was like, wow, that's like, it can't get any more obvious than that.
Yeah. And then, you know, it was so great to see you and Kristen defend your titles. We obviously don't, it's so tough to win and you're both great players. So it's not crazy that it happens, but for all the stars to align, for both of you to do it on the weekend, you just said that you like the course. It's relatively new to our tour, relatively compared to some of the, you know, the originals. Would you be okay with changing it out either for another course in the area or being in a different area or going to another event?
Yeah, I think it should be changed. I think that the property itself is actually not good for disc golf at all. Like, if you would just see that property, you wouldn't ever think, oh yeah, let's put a disc golf course here. Because it has very few trees, and the mm-hmm. trees that it has are all kind of like bunched together in like bushy areas. Mm-hmm. And that's really not what disc golf needs or wants. We want like spread out trees that are like singled here and there where you can like shape shots around. So I think what they did on that for the property they had, they did very well to make an interesting and fun course. But I think that's about as good as it'll get there. And I think disc golf should and can do better in different places.
when I'm thinking about courses and thinking about this upcoming weekend, it's been very much determined. It's 14 holes of Northwood Black, 4 holes of the old Northwood Gold, which we saw in 2019 World. So it's always we're going to call it Northwood Park this weekend. Just for everyone out there, when you're confused as to what it's being referenced is, we're calling it Northwood Park because it is technically a hybrid.
You should
of these
call
courses.
It Northwood Platinum. Just come up with your own name. Yeah. Just it's not black. It's not gold. It's not like just come up
it's
with a
the diamond version. Now.
Aluminum. Yeah, just exactly. Call it Northwood Aluminum.
Anyway, so that's what's happening this weekend. You're not playing, so all bets are off, but what are you looking forward to seeing when you can spend time watching? What will get you most excited about this weekend's action? Boom, or scores, like, or strategy, or whatever.
Terry, I just like watching disc golf.
Oh, you're too specific. Chicken. So you're no. You're too chicken to call out a favorite or make any predictions. And this is your cop out.
Does it make you feel silly or not make you feel silly? But do you look at it like kind of some of us do? Like, yeah, well, of course, Paul's getting warmed up. The major is next week. Like that just it seems all too obvious, like such a I've been saying the term Disney storyline for the last couple of weeks, like. Guess what? Knock, knock, knock. Here comes the major. Paul's warming up.
All right. Come on. Take a stand here. What are you going to see? What are we going to see?
Oh, this golf is so unpredictable, man. How should I predict this? Also, I haven't thought about this yet. It's 2 days away from the tournament. You already think about this now?
Well, we have to. Our podcast is tonight.
Oh, that's right. Well...
Look at previous ledge stones. Start there. Look at previous ledge stones of which you've won. But start there. Use that maybe even to warm up your brain.
Do you think previous ledge stones are going to be an accurate indication on who might win this tournament?
Cole Radalin
Ricky
played two great rounds out there.
Ricky Wysocki does.
Mm-hmm. I played with Cole that round where he shredded, and It was some of the best disc golf I've ever watched in my life. It was absolutely mind-blowing how he threw that disc. Perfect on every hole. Let me think one sec. I'm going to say I don't think a discraft player is going to win.
Okay. That's
going to be my first idea that I just came up with.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. That was unexpected.
That eliminates a lot of favorites right off the bat.
Okay. What about a guy in the hunt for his first major, but's not throwing forehands right now? And I'm talking about Calvin Heimberg. Well, yeah, Calvin Heimberg fits that description.
I do not see Calvin on that track without a forehand. Winning his first major
because scrambling so required or something else.
Yeah, scrambling and just a lot of tee shots out there really open up if you have a forehand you can rely on.
Do you think we're going to see a first time major
guys have that?
Do you think we're going to see a first time major winner? That's where I'll leave it. Like we've obviously there are people who have won majors and there are people who have not. Do you think we're going to get a first timer?
I don't think we're going to get a first timer.
Okay. That's all. That's all right. That's,
I mean, if we keep whittling this down,
we'll eventually narrow it down
to Isaac Robinson is who you're, he's not a first time winner. Yeah, he's not. So
yeah,
that
would be, yeah.
But then he has a forehand that's say greater than like a James Conrad, but he doesn't go to it often.
To be fair, we haven't designated MPO or FPO. So no, either way, he's going to win. He's going to be like, oh, look, I told you, look, it's Kristen Tatar.
Okay.
I'm going to say Missy Gannon's going to win. I think historically she's done very well there.
After you just told me that doesn't matter, but okay.
I didn't say that. I just asked you if you think it mattered. And she just took off a week, right? So she's probably fresh and ready.
Her, Owen Scoggins, I saw Owen at the course. Owen skipped playing as well, as did Missy Gannon, as did another top FPO player that escapes me right now. Paige didn't play this last weekend either. There's another one yet. Yeah, I mean...
It would probably make me happiest if Owen won. Okay. I would be a huge fan of watching that. I think I'm going to say Missy's going to win. I'm just saying that to not say Kristen's going to win, because I don't know. I feel like saying that the by far big favorite is going to win is so boring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my favorite would be Owen to win, but I think Missy's going to win. Just saying, because I actually think Kristen's probably going to win. And then an MPO, I'm going to give it to... You want me to say one name? Is that how this game works?
No, you don't have to. I'm not trying to. Have to say I said, a name. What are you looking forward to? That was my original question. I don't need a hot take of like calling someone out as for sure winning. I'm just like, what are you looking forward to in the competition or the scores or the
course strategy, or the weather?
Last time Eagle McMahon took 2 months off due to injury, he came back. His first event was the European Open, and he won it. So factor that in if you want here, whatever you want. That's what I'm going for. It's just the stories, the things you're thinking about or would think about.
Well, what brings me the most joy when I watch sports, it's when it's a really close competition and I get nervous for the people who are out there, because I know all of them, of course. And I'm trying to imagine how I would feel if I was in this situation, which is so weird. I get more nervous sometimes watching others compete for the win. Mm-hmm. Then I get when I'm there myself competing for the win. Like sometimes when I'm watching them and they hit like a crazy clutch putt and like a key moment, I'm like, how the hell did he do that? It's like an insane putt. But then when I'm in the moment, I don't even really think about it that much. I just step up and do it, because you're like in the moment, you're just there doing it. But when you're watching it, you're like, it's so different living it through watching it versus actually being there and doing it. So yeah, I hope for a really tight competition, multiple people in contention, and seeing Eagle do well would obviously be really exciting.
What a storyline, not just the injury and coming back from it, but the whole MVP component of back-to-back weekends, you taking off, going on maternity leave, for lack of a better term, you taking off
paternity leave.
Yeah. Paternity. Thanks. In that case. And then Eagle just sliding right in, like, yeah, that would make a heck of a story over at,
passing the baton
over at MVP. That's for sure.
It would be another insane story.
They'd be like, they'd call Simon up, like, remember those pixels we were going to print? I'm sorry, those machines are very busy right now with an Eagle win.
I'd love to see it.
Every contract is different. Do you personally benefit from a celebratory disc, a commemorative disc being made? Does your checkbook benefit from those coming out? Your bank account.
What kind of question is that? Of course.
Okay. I don't feel like sometimes it doesn't, whether it's a threshold of things you haven't sold yet or you got to get somewhere, or if you do or don't win them. Like, I feel like everybody's bonus structure is a little different. And that's why I wondered if you personally benefited if they release 5,000 more pixels.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if, like, your contract will just say $1 million. And MVP says, cool, you won. We're going to print these Simon discs and we're going to make some of that million back, buddy. And you're not seeing any of that. Like, that wouldn't be shocking.
Yeah. I mean, you're a big deal. Like, you got guaranteed money. Not everybody else has the guaranteed money you do. You know this, right?
Let's make him feel as uncomfortable about his money as we can.
Jerry, nothing in life is guaranteed.
I think your checks are right now. I think your checks are. And if you don't believe me, words on my way.
I'll just take 1 month. It's okay. I'll just take 1 month. You know, you're not going to miss that. Let me be your translator, like like Otani, and we'll see how your money works.
That was a question on the board. We're gonna let you go here soon, but one of the other topics within disc golf that's come up in the last few weeks, we talked about it briefly last week, was just the whole idea of the U.S. integrity coming along and getting into the precursor to the idea of us getting more serious about betting within disc golf and gambling. Do you as a guy that, I'll leave it there. How do you feel about that?
You enjoy Vegas, huh?
I do enjoy Vegas, and the only sports bet I've ever made in my entire life was when I was like 19 or 20 years old, and it was on a horse. And I knew nothing about that horse. I just liked its name. It was like something teapot. Horse names are the greatest names I've ever heard. It's unbelievable.
Only second to them are boat names. But yes, go on. I agree.
Okay. So my horse, Flying Mermaid, or whatever it was called. I knew nothing about the horse. I knew nothing about horse racing. I didn't look at the odds or anything. That was also my first ever horse race I went to. Mm-hmm. I just liked the name. I bet on it, like $50, and I won like $400 as the horse won. I was like, cool, I'm done sports betting for the rest of my life. And that's about my sports betting story. I've never placed any other bets in sports ever, nor am I interested to ever.
So
I'm lucky, Terry. I'm not addicted to gambling.
No, because I could see how you could be with like a little bit of the fun and the luck, but then also the competitive, but yet fun loving nature you have. Like all of that's sometimes mixed with a drink or two. Like all of that can make for a really wild concoction for sure.
Yeah, I think in Vegas, I always do so poorly when I go out and play that I just kind of lost the thrill after a couple of years of just losing mm-hmm. hundreds of dollars here and there. And it's just something I can see how easily it could become addicting and you can like ruin your life with gambling. So I just made the decision that I'm not even going to bother to think about it anymore because I'm not into it.
Now, let me remind everyone, a few months ago, Simon and I, we met up. It was my birthday. And after I had made back the initial investment on the evening and I was up a little, I wanted to quit and walk away ahead. And Simon was giving me a hard time about not continuing the attempts.
You're on a hot streak, buddy. Why quit now?
He gave me a hard time.
What were we doing? Where?
We were at the, it was my birthday and we were at in Peoria at the boat.
At the boat. Ah, yeah.
And we started out and eventually I got ahead and you did not like the idea of me just quitting while I was ahead a few hundred dollars.
Well, much like him watching disc golf, he probably gets much more fun out of watching you gamble and he gets more nervous. He's like, oh, is Terry going to double down here? Good.
Anyway, so it, one of the rare times you can walk out ahead and like you said, though, having that discipline is the most difficult thing about all of gambling.
So do you think betting in disc golf is going to be good for us?
I don't know. I know nothing about the sports betting world at all. Okay. I just hope there won't ever be like some betting scandal, which I've heard happens in sports where betting mm-hmm. is allowed.
100% there will be.
And that's going to be a sad day for disc golf when that's going to hit the news that someone missed a putt on purpose to win a bet.
Yeah.
You think that's going to happen for sure?
Yeah.
100%. Like happens in every single sport. It's just, it might not happen the first 5 years. It might not happen the first 7 years, but it will happen at some point. Somebody will get caught somehow doing something to improve a bet, whether they're, again, it could be something like, hey, they owe money to somebody and now that's how they're going to pay off their debt. It could just be that they have some side bets going on. Like, oh, hey, I'm going to take third this week if I have the opportunity, or I'm definitely going to take under top 10, you know, a favorite who thinks that, you know, everyone's betting on him to do well. Maybe they don't do so well this weekend and they get some money on the side for that. It will 100% happen. I don't think it's going to be crazy. Like, I don't personally think it's going to like infect our sport, but it will happen. There will be someone. It's the nature of sports betting.
Come on. We all know a few of the shysters already on the course. So somebody's going to get bought out. This is really random, but now you and Natalia, your family going through her second pregnancy, you guys as a family, anything you want to weigh in on Macy Valadez, Katrina Allen out there grinding out golf, like DGPT events as far along as they are? Do you have to, are you in awe of that? How do you feel about that?
Well, I've never been pregnant, so I don't really know what it feels like. But I talked to Austin, who is Katrina's boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And he told me that Katrina feels great. She feels like she wouldn't even know she was pregnant if it wasn't for the obvious pregnancy signs. Feeling wise, she says she's not tired and she's feeling fine and she's sleeping good, eating normal. So, I mean, like, as long as you're not doing any harm to yourself or the baby, then go for it. Why not?
What I mean by all of that setup is I'm so impressed. I think it's incredible that they're this far along, that both of them are. And you know, as we just pulled it up, Katrina finished in eighth and Macy this weekend finished in 14th. And I just, hats off, kudos. Like, it's just so impressive to see them out there.
Yeah, I agree. Kudos to anyone who's out there, and with a pregnancy, double kudos. I mean, every pregnancy is different. This is our second one, and it was so unbelievably different than the first one. The first one was like a walk in the park, and this one has been absolutely misery. And it sounds like they probably have one that is, for now, more manageable and enjoy.
excuse me if this has been asked before, but are there plans to extend the family more after this? Do you plan on another child, a third?
How many are you going to pop out?
Or fifth?
Yeah.
No, I am extremely certain that I will have two kids, and that's all.
Oh, God, I have so many questions I want to ask now. Like, personal questions. Like, you know.
I've always wanted two kids.
Yeah.
And after the first kids... After the first kid, we debated if one is maybe enough because it was such a handful. But then we decided that having two kids is probably long-term the better decision for our first kid and for us. So, yeah, hopefully this kid is happy and healthy like our first one. And then I'm done.
I'm sorry, I have to ask. How done are you? You going to get that thing officially done?
Very, very. I'll be officially done.
Okay. Are you? This is such a hard question to answer. No, it's not a personal. But like, are you happy that you're going to have a boy and a girl? Like, I know some families.
So stoked.
Okay, cool. Like, I assume it's so hard to ask that because now that you're having a girl, so it's like, how can you? You don't want her to come back in like 20 years and look like, I watched this interview, Dad. You really wanted a boy or something? Like, I know some families, we have some friends who had two boys, and she was ecstatic. She wanted two boys. She's like, I have all the stuff. I've got the hand-me-down clothes. It's so much easier. Boys are easier than girls up to a certain point, blah, blah, blah. But I love a boy and a girl. I've got the same thing.
Yeah, I know. But here's something I didn't realize before I became a parent. The thing with having a kid is that you are happy with what you have and what you get. Mm-hmm. And it really, like, this is the full honesty. It doesn't matter. Like, if I had a boy now, I would be so thrilled to have two boys. Mm-hmm. And if I have a boy and a girl, now I'm so thrilled that I have a boy and a girl. Like, the outcome literally did not matter. I don't even think if I had to choose one that I would have preferred, I couldn't really give an honest answer. Like, it just... With kids, I think it might be the only thing in life where you just really don't prefer something. It's just you're happy with what you have because that's how it is. And either one is as good as the other.
I just think of, you know, someone like Terry with two girls. He will never experience having a little boy. Like, there's something different or for his,
it's, you know, not over yet, Terry.
Yeah, yes, it is.
Actually, yeah.
Oh, it is? Okay.
I mean, there's different experiences, obviously, with boys and girls. You know, if you had two boys, would your wife be like, oh, you know, would she be missing out on a little something from not having a little girl? Things like that. Like, there's a lot to think about. Obviously, everybody wants a small, happy, healthy 10 fingers, 10 toes child. Like that's the dream. Just, it doesn't matter as long as they're healthy, but I didn't know if there was a preference for the family. Like we really kind of wanted one of each, but we're happy that we have two healthy kids. I didn't know. And I know it's a personal question. It's hard to answer.
Well, before my son was born, I really wanted a daughter. And I was really, I mean, looking back now, kind of falsely hoping that it was going to be a girl, the first one. Mm. But then when we found out it was a boy, I realized that my hopes were not based on reality and that I was just as happy with a boy. And now looking back, I'm actually really happy that it was a boy and not a girl.
Okay.
And I think that's just how it works. I think that's just how it works.
Big brothers are cool, to be honest. Big brothers are cool.
Another thing along with your family and your planning and just life was the consideration about relocating. Where does that now stand? Is that in terms of fast forwarding or being slowed down or whatever? Where do you stand with that?
Yeah, it's really sad to leave a place just based on the weather. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's kind of where I'm at because everything else in Massachusetts, I like. There's so many great things up here that I really don't want to give up. But the weather is so bad. Oh, my God. The winters are so long and just so brutal. Like, now it's starting to be nice out, but literally 2 weeks ago we had a snowstorm in April. And it's just like... And the crappy weather starts like in November. And then you have 5 to 6 months of just windy, rainy, slushy, cold, wind, snow. It's just like, ugh. And it never stops. It feels like it never stops. And then after like the fourth month of it, you're just like depressed that you can't go outside. Your child wants to go run outside, but it's freaking slushy out. And like everything's wet and gross. And you just... can't play disc golf outside. It's like it just ruins the whole vibe. just the weather, but it seems like it's such a big role, at least for my career, is to have decent weather. But then if you go somewhere else, then we lose all the good things that are here. Like I've said this in a couple podcasts, but if you Google best state to raise a family in the U.S., it's number one is Massachusetts for multiple reasons. And it just feels weird to leave the number one place to raise a family in America.
Yeah, but understandable with, again, your career and the things that you need to be most successful. And I can understand how that all weighs heavily on you, especially when it comes to the weather. And it's funny, the question came in on the board exactly as I was thinking it. How do you compare Germany weather and where you lived and where you grew up compared to what you're experiencing right now? How similar or different are they?
It's pretty similar. I would say the summers are a bit nicer and warmer here, and the winters are a bit crappier and colder here. So here it's a bit more extreme in both directions. Where I grew up is very, very mild in both directions. We'll have snow in Germany, at least where I lived, like every other year, maybe like one proper snow day where the snow actually sticks for a couple of weeks. Mm. And in Massachusetts, it seems to be that happens multiple times every year. And, you know, Wisconsin is... and probably even worse.
you've been here. When you visited, one of the times you visited, it certainly was not our most pleasant of times. That's for sure. So yeah.
Sledding with the kids is fun though. You know, that's always.
It is so fun. I love winter. I'm someone who loves winter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trust me. I enjoy snow. I love skiing, sledding, being even just walking outside through a snowy forest is awesome. Like I really enjoy it. I like the cold too. I like cold more than I like warm. Or hot, which is a big reason I'm like really struggling to imagine me moving to Florida, for example, where the summers are just brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, but in theory, you're traveling in the summers, right? Like that's.
Yeah, but then I still have
stuff to come home to that.
Three people soon and three people who are dealing with what I'm not dealing with.
True. Any other projects that are clearly, I know your life is about to get even more wild here in a couple, literally in a matter of hours, but any other bigger projects that are outside of MVP? I think of course design, productions, videos, anything else that's kind of big, or is that a lot of that stuff currently put on hold?
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Basically, yeah, everything's been put on hold. There's a course that Casey and I designed here about 20 minutes south of Maple Hill. It's a really, really cool property. And the design is basically done. And I think they're ordering baskets this or next week. And that's like my first proper disc golf design that I've ever done. At least without the help of an actual course designer like Avery Jenkins, for example. So that's an exciting project that will hopefully open up maybe late spring, early summer.
What should people expect from that course when they go out there? What are you envisioning people going? What's their experience? Should it be like?
You know, for me and all the things that disc golf should be, fun is very high up. Mm-hmm. And it's above challenge. So people mm-hmm. can expect something. If you're above 960 rated, something extremely fun and scoreable, and anything around 960 and below, it's going to be a good challenge to score under par with a good mix of woods and long and distance and open and shot shapes. We've really, with all the experience we have and knowledge that we have, we actually started this design the week after we were at the John Hauck conference that mm-hmm. he held at Maple Hill, where we learned so much about all the tips and tricks of course design and the things you got to keep in mind with safety and what is a good shot versus not a good shot, what's a good hole, not a good hole, and even like the order of holes and pars you want to have ideally. Mm-hmm. You know, John Hauck has spent years and years now on thinking about what's the ultimate way to design a disc golf course. So yeah, I spent many, many hours walking that property, and I had a full 18 holes laid out actually after one day, because the property is so sick you can do anything and it would be pretty good. Mm. And of that first layout, basically nothing stayed the same.
Wow.
We switched the whole thing around multiple times just to make sure that it's right. And just kept questioning each other's ideas and whole designs. And we walked that property up and down, back and forth so many times. Just to make sure we get it right, because it was such a good property that you could have really like played it anyway and it would have been good, but we wanted it to be the best.
Well, I let me just say, with obviously not seeing it and I'm excited about it, but hats off to you guys, because it's so easy to go out to a property to see what you think are obvious lines and obvious greens and tees and all that stuff. And then to be able to shift your mind into, wait a minute, let's wipe the slate clean, or let's get rid of these four holes because we should actually play them backwards and only put in two in the same spot. Like all of that being able to do that in your mind and while working with someone else is very difficult. And so that's kudos. Yeah.
It was very difficult. I was actually shocked on how difficult it was. Cause when I first saw the property and walked it for the first time, I was like, I thought it's going to be easy. I thought this was going to be the easiest first design ever. I thought everything will just fall into place. I thought there couldn't be a bad hole out there. So I thought it didn't really matter what you would do because it would be great. But boy, was I wrong. And boy, did I have a lot of headaches sitting over my little sheet of holes where I had the layout, and I just kept Xing stuff out and rerouting holes and then switching it completely around and starting to play holes backwards. And I just, it's God, if both options are good, but you have to choose one, man, I didn't like to make all those decisions. And because I felt like it was such a big responsibility to get it right.
Well, I know exactly what you mean. And I think it's awesome that you had that project. And I know it gives you even more appreciation for all of the courses and all the courses designers that are out there and what they've done in order to provide us all with so much joy. And then for you to be at, you know, kind of the forefront of that experience as well, is just incredibly fulfilling. So it's awesome that you had that, some of those revelations and that experience. All right, buddy. We know you've, we could talk to you for 8 more hours. The world would love it. We'd love it. But we know how important your time is. So
sleep
and sleep and all of that.
Get the sleep over the next day or two.
So
10:40 already. Oh my God.
Yeah. Any final shout outs, thanks, words, recognitions, anything you want to throw out in the world in any direction, the world would love to hear it. What do you got for us?
Oh, another one. Why not just thank everyone?
Okay. Another easy cop out. I like it.
Cop out. I don't. Okay. Let me.
You choose to hang out with Terry, right? Like we both do. I do as well sometimes. You do. It's not easy.
No,
Terry's
that,
a favorite.
If that's how you feel, that's fair. If that's how you feel, yes, absolutely. I just didn't know if you had sponsors or a caddy that you forgot late or you know, anything else. That's all.
What are we going to see over the next 2 months from you? Honestly, like are we going to see any videos? Are we going to see family videos? Like what's now that you're not disc golfing, what is the plan before you kind of, you know, go on a little vacation from disc golf?
Yeah, I have some hopes that I can turn off my phone and you will hear nothing from me in the next 2 months.
That's awesome.
That would be probably the best case scenario for me. I'm probably not going to manage to do that. But we'll see. It really all depends. Literally, I've made absolutely zero plans for after Thursday because you just don't know how a newborn is going to do. And I just didn't want to have anything planned or even think about what's going to happen afterwards. It's just going to be time with the baby and just hopefully everything goes well. And after that, who knows? Maybe it's going to be a super easy, healthy baby. And then I can do videos. I can practice. I can maybe play local tournaments. I can maybe do work on business stuff. But if there's any issues, then I can do none of that. And I don't know.
Well, we're all wishing for a very healthy and I think sleepy baby. Everyone likes a sleepy baby. Like let him sleep most, like get 4 or 5 hours that first couple nights. And God, that's the best.
It would be very nice because our first one was the exact opposite.
Yeah. My son was up every few hours. My daughter, she was so sleepy. It was like all the time. It didn't matter. She'd sleep for 4 to 5 hours at a knock, wake up for an hour or two, then go back to bed for 4 hours. So I wish nothing but that for every father and mother.
All right, buddy.
We'll see what happens. I'll let you know.
Yeah, we wish you and Natalia, the whole family, everyone the best and happy, healthy, all that good stuff, and hopefully as smooth as childbearing and parenting can possibly go for you. We wish nothing but that for you. So thank you so much. We know you're pulled in a million directions. We know there's all sorts of podcasts and media requests, and we very much, and I know all the Smashies and us personally, just very much appreciate getting a couple hours of your time here tonight. It's awesome to see you take down another victory, and great to share all this other stuff that's not even victory related. We
barely touched on the victory, which, yeah, I'm okay with.
It doesn't
matter. We barely touched on Nashville. That was quite impressive.
Yeah, well, we don't need to.
Everybody watched it. Everybody watched it.
I agree.
You stomped through the course.
No,
way to go.
I'm happy.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you. We love you guys, and nothing but the best. Thanks for joining us, and hopefully we talk to you soon, and we're looking forward to those pictures in a few days of a nice, happy, and healthy delivery. So thank you, buddy.
That'd be best case scenario, guys. Thank you so much. Right. And I'll see you guys. You'll be the coverage guy, Terry, right?
I'm in the booth this weekend in Bend with Nate and Nate. So, yes.
All right. I'll send you the first picture of the baby when you're talking about disc golf.
If you're good with me announcing it, and if you haven't, yes, we're all for it.
You know, Mo's going to ask you for that picture immediately so we can put it on the broadcast.
All right. Have a good night. See you.
Good night, Simon.
All right. Good night, guys. Bye.
Simon Lizotte, I think he won a tournament.
Something like that. I heard he putted well, and he scored better than some other people.
Good job.
Way to go. All right, MCO.
We'll quickly read off our other top 10 MPO competitors. All the people Simon beat.
All the people Simon beat.
The next nine he beat.
Okay, we'll go just the next. Not all of them?
Not all of them. All right. Just the next nine.
In second place, Paul Macbeth, who, as we said, is to me, his backhand looked good. His forehand looked great.
Okay.
His putting was decent. So second place, Paul Macbeth. Third place, tie between Richard Wysocki and Chris Dickerson. Fifth place, Jeremy Kohling. Did you see the video of Jeremy on the very last hole?
Checking big putt, right?
He checked the phone to find out where he was at,
mm-hmm.
and knowing that he could run at it and not have to worry about taking about falling back, so to speak, and that he only had an option to move up, he drained a huge putt. It was really cool to see.
That a boy, Jeremy.
Jeremy Kohling tied with Nicholas Antala in fifth place. Big tie for seventh between Anthony Barella, Silas Schultz, who's not a name that we've seen up in the top 10 recently, so congratulations, Silas. Same with Ty Love. Congratulations, Ty. And Gannon Burr. Gannon had a really rough final round. It wasn't pretty. I would say one solid spit putt that maybe should have gone in, and then a lot of side putts that maybe could have stuck but didn't, and he just wasn't himself that round.
Did he throw up his hands at all?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
He gave a typical Gannon, like, what's going on kind of reaction. Even when I think, like, he tickled some links and he's like, come on. I don't know how serious he was, but ultimately Gannon still takes a top 10 finish. So congratulations, Gannon Burr. That is your top 10 in the MPO field. Honestly, the MCO course, I don't find it very memorable. There are probably three holes that you think of like, oh, that's a hole that I can, that is definitely, that's an MCO hole. Like those, there's a few of them out there, but in general, I thought the course played very well. I thought it played very smoothly. So let's talk about FPO. We're going over to first place, Kristen Tatar. Second place, Holland Hanley. Holland, who unfortunately, obviously, was tied going into the final round with Kristen, but just absolutely kind of melted that final round. It wasn't fun to watch. She shot a one over par and just kind of... You can never say you gave the win to Kristen because she takes the win, hands down. But Holland definitely opened the door to let Kristen Tatar walk through it. Third place, Henna Blomroos is coming off of an ankle injury,
mm-hmm.
shows up. No one was really talking much about her until the final round when she shot a really, really good 4 under par to get herself right up into that that place. It was, she was kind of mentioned a little bit throughout the broadcast throughout days one and two, but it was more like, oh, look, Hannah's doing this, Hannah's doing that, but not really in contention, but ultimately a really good final round to get her into third place. So it's really nice to see Hannah tie for fourth place between Ella Hansen and Haley King. Sixth place, a tie between Evelina Salonen and Kat Murch. Eighth place, Katrina Allen. Ninth place, Silva Saarinen, who just an absolute meltdown final round. Felt bad. It's like she didn't want to be there. Yeah. It was really, everything went against her. Every bad roll you could imagine, every bad shot she threw, just nothing worked out. It didn't feel like she got any breaks that final round.
Yeah.
And it looked like it on her face. Like you could see, it was just like, get me out of here. Get me to the next course.
Yeah. And I think a testament to that, obviously we see that she had no birdies during the final round, but just a testament. It is she shot plus nine on the final round, the previous 2 days combined, two under par. Mm-hmm. And like, if you didn't watch a minute of coverage, that alone jumps off a page at you as like, yeah, things mm-hmm. clearly weren't the same as they were the prior 2 days, to go two under for the first 36 holes, but then to shoot nine over in the last 18 holes. So
it's hard to say if it was lead card pressure. I mean, she's young. It wouldn't shock me if she was a little stressed from just the attention. She seems a little bit more of a shy individual based on some of the interviews she's given.
And just a whole international.
A lot of it. There's a lot of things that can pile up. And ultimately, it looked like it kind of crushed her on the final round. And in 10th place, a name we have been mentioning quite a bit this season, Rebecca Cox gets another finish, top 10 finish. 10, so awesome. Congratulations, Rebecca Cox.
All right. And down just a couple of spots lower, we're going to give her the shout out. Jessica Weiss tied for 11th, but is celebrating a birthday today.
Shout out. So happy birthday,
specifically Jessica Weiss. I think for her birthday present, she doesn't love it, but it was required, a little dental work that she has actually had. She's been struggling with mightily in terms of pain over the last few weeks. I've seen multiple posts about it. I think it was either today or yesterday. Specifically, she had some significant dental work done. So we wish her the best.
Yeah, get it. Trust me, get it done and just be done with it.
Yeah. And so I think I saw that post just today. She made it sound like they were maybe still in Tennessee and then en route to get up to the Peoria area to get prepped for this weekend. So happy birthday to her. Also, happy birthday, I think I saw pop up, I know he listens from time to time, one Chris Sprague. So happy birthday to Chris Sprague over there in the Iowa Quad Cities.
Happy birthday, area. Chris. So. The other big story this weekend was clearly round two, the delay in the event. I think we kind of have to talk about it. There was a threat made. Specifically, I believe the story is it was a threat made against Natalie Ryan, as well as I think it was maybe sent to Natalie Ryan, but I think it was a threat against her and including spectators and the crew from the Disc Golf Pro Tour and
the entire event.
It was basically the event. Yeah. And from what I've read, the Pro Tour handled it very well. They requested additional. They notified the local authorities, requested additional support, and apparently that support didn't get there in time before Natalie was teeing off. So at that point, they held the event. Eventually, the local authorities showed up. They had someone walk along with that card. My understanding is there were even some bag checks going on for spectators and things, but it ultimately delayed the event by about 90 minutes. And so, you know, no surprise, we hear at Smashbox do not condone any sort of that, anything like that. I can't understand the concept of why anyone would even like what the reasoning would even be. Like, I understand or what you're trying to accomplish with that. Like, it's just not, there's nothing.
Yeah.
It's a whole foreign concept in my head on it. Like, if you disagree with how things are going, that is the answer. Of all things, like there are so many different ways I think to be handled if you disagree. And that to me is beyond the pale. And it's so unfathomable to me.
Yeah. And to your point, it serves no one any good.
Exactly.
Whether you are for or against the idea of where our policies stand in terms of transgender participation, having a threat of that nature, first of all, is of course crazy and all of that. But then just who do you think that would benefit by calling in or participating or being part of that threat? Because you're in essence, you're punishing everyone. And there's just, I get it. I don't get it as yeah. I guess, as I can say it. All I'm going to say on it to wrap that up also is there, of course, are, we'll say conflicting report/ theories. You've heard both, you've read both as to whether people, how they want to interpret what has been reported as to if it was specific to a transgender conversation or if it was to the event. Everyone can, I'm just going to say this, you guys can all continue to fight about however you want to perceive it. At the end of the day, any threat of violence toward either an entire group being the event or to an individual, either one doesn't make sense from a practicality standpoint. I just know that, unfortunately, this is already taking a side narrative to like a whole nother discussion. Everyone can continue to fight about it. I'm not going to participate in that rhetoric and fighting about who it was or wasn't directed at and what at the end of the day, the entire point is it shouldn't have happened, period.
I do want to reiterate something Natalie said and, you know, go out and read her Instagram post where she just thanks the Pro Tour, local authorities, the staff, just everybody on how it was handled and how serious it was taken, which obviously it, you know, we think that it has to be. So go out and check out Natalie's post on, I believe it was Instagram, about how it was handled and how happy she was how it was handled. So I think that is a big feather in the cap of just the locals and the Pro Tour for this type of incident, which you just obviously always hope that you never have to deal with something like this. But, you know, there's always something different that we have to deal with.
Well, and I think of, you know, Felix from Ace Run Pro. I saw a post from him just saying, you know, because he was, I believe, on the catch cam coverage during that round. And like, just who would have ever thought that would be a situation that any of us would have to deal with in this day and age? And I'll just repeat what he wrote. And this is Felix from Ace Run Pro. And he said Music City was an event unlike any I've previously covered. I won't go into detail, but many of you know the threat of violence loomed during event during round two. A big shout out to the Pro Tour, the Nashville PD, and all those involved in helping to ensure safety for all competitors, staff, spectators, and volunteers. I pray that something like this never happens again. So, there's so many layers and I'm going to leave it at that, but yeah, glad to hear everyone is safe. And at the end of the day, that's clearly a top concern. Mm-hmm. That is MCO. You want to quickly talk about this upcoming major this weekend? Yeah, we'll move right into it. I alluded to it earlier. You can call it semantics or a nitty-gritty detail or nitpicky detail, whatever you want to call it. We're going to do our best, as we've been informed, that this is not, in fact, as I said, the Northwood Black course. Understandably, it's 14 of the same holes, so I get it. They have rerouted
it's Northwood, a few of the holes. Northwood Zinc.
Northwood, I don't know.
Cubic Zirconium.
Exactly. a few holes, namely, and again, it's even tough for me because now I've seen like 30 iterations of Northwood over the 20 years I've been familiar with being down there. I think literally the first time I was ever at in Peoria area for golf. No, that was in the 90s. So, but in this area specifically, it was like 2006 or 8 or so. Anyway, we skip a few holes that you're used to seeing at Northwood Black. I believe it's right after hole 2. We go to a different section. I think we skip 3, 4, and 5. Is what it was of typically what we'd see of 3, 4, and 5. We go to a different section. We play some different holes. And then a few other holes are worked in that are part of the old gold layout, so to speak. So that's what we're going to see this weekend. Four rounds of it. Mm. And let me just say, it's going to be grueling. And let me also just pray or ask or beg that rain mud.
Oh, it's going to be yucky.
Keeps everyone safe.
Yeah.
The temperatures are going to be perfectly fine. 60s, 70s, somewhere in that neighborhood. Right now, as of here, we are on a Tuesday night. When you type it in, what do we got, Johnny, on the not sponsored by?
Weather on the sevens, we have it's going to be 67 degrees on Friday with a 97% chance of rain around 10 a.m. That dips down to about 64% in your mid-afternoon, but your drive time home, another 87%. So ultimately, we are going to see some rain on Friday. Moving into Saturday, that drops down to about 20% for most of the day, maybe with a little bit increase at the end of the day at about 48%. Going into Sunday, that does jump up to the mid 60s, 64%, 65% around tee off time, over into the 40% when your MPO are going to be teeing off. Ultimately, Terry, this is going to be a rainy, muddy event that is not going to be enjoyable to be out on the course, is my guess.
No,
that's your weather on the sevens.
Thank you. So best of luck in that sense. We know that this is a
Thursday. Looks nice though.
Wooded course. They've done a lot of work. I was physically there on Friday.
Can they put a big tarp over the course?
I was physically there on Friday checking it out. I'm so glad I went. I had a front row seat to conversations taking place between some of the PDGA operations staff along with the event staff. It was worth every penny of the admission I paid. It was great. Talking about various concerns and this getting cut and this getting trimmed up and sponsor wall, all this good stuff, all these finishing touches that go into just like they do for every other big event. But it was just great to be there for some of that conversation. And tons of wood chips have already been put down. This was back on Friday, had already been put down and in place. It's just going to be muddy. I don't see another way around it for a good portion of this course. There's going to be a lot of mud out there. So I hope everyone, it's going to be slower moving. That's going to be for camera operators. That's going to be for spectators. That's going to be for the players themselves, spotters, volunteers, scorekeepers. I'm not going to lie. There are going to be some long days to buckle up for, on the course, in the booth, in the control room. I think everywhere. So I'll be interested to see how long these rounds play. You're playing them four rounds for this major. It's going to be slog. Is that the right word?
Slog, I think, is the appropriate term right now.
That's what I think. And I'm not trying to be like Debbie Downer either or overly pessimistic. But when you look at that forecast and then you know what this course has to offer, which is a very difficult track in perfect weather.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not going to speed things.
Yeah, exactly. Add slipping and possibly some muddy. I have a feeling that the fairways will probably be relatively okay with. I bet you Nate brings in some mulch and things like that. But anywhere off that main fairway, probably not going to be pleasurable. It's going to slow things down. Players are going to get frustrated. Cameramen are going to get frustrated. Viewers will probably be frustrated.
It's weather. Weather is weather. We've had plenty of inclement weather this year. I'm not picking on the event or the location or anything of that nature. I'm just kind of mentally trying to prepare myself and others for what I think we're going to see. Four rounds, one course.
Yeah, one course.
That's what's going to be played. Now, that is important, I think, to note, because when we move into later in the year for Ledgestone, I think we're only going to see them playing out at Eureka. So the last couple of years, we've had Eureka and Northwood kind of mixed in together, two rounds at one course, two at the other. This year, if they're going to play at all at Northwood, which I don't think they are, if
no,
they
were at Ledgestone, play there at
Ledgestone, they would play even a slightly different configuration to what they're playing this weekend. But that doesn't even appear to be the case.
No, my understanding is it's all Eureka for Ledgestone for the MPO. I don't know what FPO. I don't know if FPO is going to be playing Sunset Hills. I don't know the FPO configuration, but I know. Well, I know, and put that in quotes. What I heard was that it was going to be all Eureka for MPO.
Eureka, you're right.
Eureka.
Someone asked on the board, please tell me there is a cut. I haven't dug that deep, but I bet you there's not. But there should be. But I bet you there's not. But there should be. Have I made myself clear?
It's a major. They should definitely be a cut.
Let's back up.
I like Nate Heinold, but there's.
I don't think that's a Nate call specifically.
I was about to say, if it's his call, he is on the PDGA board of directors. I think he probably has some influence. He's running the event. He's I'm assuming the TD on record. I bet he has some sway in it. Make a cut. Period.
Here's all I'm going to say. First of all, I'm going to reach out and see if I can find that answer. I do not know it off the top of my head. I wish I did. So excuse me there. If there's, I just can't say it enough. If there's not, there absolutely should be.
Yeah.
I don't. And if there's not, and there is, and I don't think they would change it to now creating one if there wasn't one scheduled. But if there's not, it is our duty to find out who's in charge of that decision and get them on the show just to understand the logic, because then clearly you and I aren't getting the logic because we keep calling for them in specific
many
events.
People are calling for them.
Yeah. I'm okay. I just want to know who's making those decisions. And I just want to understand and hear from them the logic to the decisions if there is not a cut. Anyway.
All right.
I don't know if there's anything else to be said about it right now. That is, obviously it is going to be at least we know some people for sure. It's a 4-round event, all 4 rounds at that course, and it's going to go Thursday through Sunday. Just putting it out there in case anyone's confused about the timing and the event start and end and blah, blah, blah. Thursday through Sunday. I'll go ahead and just tack on to that just for good measure. Myself, Nate Doss and Nate Perkins. Wow. Myself, Nate Doss and Nate Sexton will be in the booth in Bend. Myself and Valerie Jenkins in the booth for the FPO from Bend.
And it is free on DGN all weekend as part
really?
Of. Yes, it is. Watch the Champions Cup. You can see that on the PDGA free on DGN. It's one of those majors where the PDGA is giving it away with your membership. It might not even be your membership. It might just be free in general for all people. But yes, it says all you have to do is link. So it is PDGA. All you have to do is link your PDGA account to your DGN account, and it just takes a few steps. So all the action is free on DGN this weekend. So don't come crying when you say you didn't watch it because it was on DGN, because it's free. Free as in beer.
Yes. So someone asked on the board, is the money line a good cut line? And that is actually the rule. If there is a cut, it has to be, if there's a cut within our professional divisions, at least I could find the exact quote, but yeah, that's a PDGA standard that was not only, it went from, I think, being suggested to being required a few years ago, or it could be even more than that by now. But if there is a cut, you must cut to the money line, and the participants moving in are at or within the cash line at that point.
Which we've said that's really cool. is really unfortunate when there's a tie. But
yeah, when you're paying out 40, but there was a 6-way tie for 39th, so they all make it in, but then ultimately
five
of them potentially don't get any of the money. Yeah, those are all possible scenarios. Did we just talk about that on the show?
We talked about it like two or three weeks ago.
It does, yeah.
No, but we don't need to go over it. Ray asks a question here, or not asks a question, but says we really should give a shout out to Zach Melton, who did on course commentary this weekend. A lot of people liked Zach. I didn't. No, yeah. I'm just kidding. Zach was great. I mean, a lot of things played into his favor. He was personable. He knows the course really well. He had the advantage of having Chris Dickerson on the lead card, I think, for two of those rounds, because him and Chris are so very friendly, that it made, for MPO at least, it made it very comfortable for Zach. I think that having Brian as well in the booth with Charlie, I think they were very good at throwing to him at the right moments, asking him the right questions. And Zach just had fun with it, which it was good. I would say Zach, it's hard to say how someone would do in the long run. I mean, I based on this performance, I'd have no problem handing the microphone to Zach any other time for on course. But not for a first time guy out there. I think there was one check in where I kind of held my breath a little bit that he the question he was asked, I don't necessarily think he answered it well, and he rambled on for a little bit. And then you're like, oh, that wasn't the best check in. But that was one in 3 days.
Yeah, and you got to wonder, did he hear the question
thoroughly?
You know, was he in a bad spot?
Yeah, but other than that, I thought the dude was solid. I had no complaints with Zach on the course.
I would go ahead and I didn't hear much of the weekend's coverage really at all, to be quite honest with you.
I watched a lot of it.
I watched very little, like literally minutes of it throughout the weekend. However, color me not shocked at all that Zach was good. That's really no surprise. I think what it brings to light, though, because obviously I did hear him a couple of times. What I think it brings to light is really honing in on a strategy, too. What are any of our on-course reporters, what is the main objective? Because for some of the things you just said, having Chris on the bet, or having Chris in the group and him being friends with him,
was able to like walk down the fairway and ask him stupid questions.
Exactly,
and joke
where
around.
I feel like Zach had a much more personal touch to it, walking with the group. And I'm only throwing this out as a counter example. A lot of times, for instance, when I was in the field, the official strategy was, I'm three quarters of the way down the fairway looking for a landing zone or a result of a disc, in or out, things of that nature, and maybe talking about a wind read and things of that. And those are things I can provide from three quarters of the way down the fairway. More frequently, recently, we've seen both Brian and Zach be much closer to the actual group, to be almost like a silent card member of the group, taking in things that are being said, having interactions, getting personal accounts and recollection, having those conversations. That's just a very different style. And we as an organization need to decide what's acceptable and or what way do we want to move forward.
I personally like, and you were one of the pioneers with this, being on the card. I want some inside stories. I want the behind the scenes scoop. I want to hear, oh yeah, Henna and Evelina were talking about the shot, you know, how, you know, it got up and rolled and she didn't expect it. I want to hear that, because I've told you this privately. I hate it. I hate it when the fact that all we get from usually someone when the sideline reporter is three quarters down the fairway is, hey Terry, can you tell me about their lie? Hey Terry, do they have a shot at the basket? Hey Terry, what happened to that disc? When I swear 60% of the time the viewer can see it because it was on the catch cam. Maybe the people in the booth didn't get a chance to see it, or they didn't get to see an exact line. I understand there is a use to that, but it gets old. It gets so old to me. And maybe I'm alone in this, and that other people want that. So I think that obviously knowing Zach wasn't down the fairway, because there were a lot of times there were a few times they'd ask Zach like, oh, how do you think that landed? And he'd just be like, I'm not sure. Like, it's down the fairway. From what we can tell, it landed here. And I think we got a red flag from a spotter, which maybe we didn't see on camera. So there was a little bit of usefulness in that. But they never once asked him really like, oh, what's his lie look like on that? Because he's not there. He is with the card. You could also see times when they call on him, he's sitting down in his chair. Literally, you've got the reaction camera showing the lead person on the tee. You see Zach in the background. Suddenly, his eyes are like, uh-oh. He stands up, walks off screen. You hear the microphone unmutes.
He has to walk away from the
action. He has to walk away from the action, which is good and bad. I think as someone, if he were to do it more often, I'd tell him, you, and it's hard because there's a hard balance. You need to be a little bit further away from the players so that we can get to you sooner, or there needs to be a signal that they are going to come to you. Hey, that could come with a lot of knowing the person on the course, but I like it personally when we get more behind the scenes stuff. I would rather hear a few more stories. I would rather hear a little bit more about what the players are talking about, what you can gather. Maybe you get a good story from a caddy. Maybe you get something from a fan or a spectator that saw something, as opposed to just having a third set of eyes for the commentators to ask you, oh, that landed on the green. Is that 25 feet out or 35 feet out? We couldn't quite tell. Like, yeah, we'll get there. We'll see it. I can wait.
That's my personal opinion. I hear your take, and that's why I'm saying I think the Pro Tour and our overall production team, of which I'm a part of in various roles, I think we just need to get comfortable with what we find the most value in, what we're trying to accomplish with people out on the ground, because we continue to see a number of different people. We've had myself, we've had Nate Perkins, we have Brian Earhart, we've had now Zach Melton, and I don't think we've had too many others.
Zoe's been on there.
Zoe's been out there a few times. Yep. Last 2 years ago, we had Nate Dawson out there. At one point, we had Ula Berry out there. Point is, I think we just really need to find what it is we're trying to accomplish, because every person, myself included, that goes out there, if you're given one directive and we're not fulfilling it, then I think we just need to get comfortable with what that's going to be.
Maybe first and second round you're with the card, and third's a final round, you're down on the fairway to give the commentators more, because maybe we don't want that type of story or interaction or interjection in a heated battle. You're going to get less of that. If it's, you know, if you've got Ricky versus Paul or AB versus Burr, we're probably not going to come down to the course like, hey, Terry, tell us what's going on. Like, the battle itself is the story. So maybe that's the type of scenario where, hey, guess what? I'm going to be down the course. You can ask me about lies. You can ask me about wind reads, things like that. But maybe the early rounds, you are with the card getting that stuff. I do think that there is some improvements and just communication that can happen with the Pro Tour. And again, this is us talking behind the curtain stuff, because we flat out, I could literally call Mo. Well, not right now. He's in bed because he's kind of a young kid. he goes to bed early. I could call him and say, hey, this is how I think. This is my opinion on what should happen. And he'd probably be like, yeah, that's a good take. I think this and this. And we'd have a great conversation. Yeah. We would. Mo listens to me. But in general, I think there is some cushion or leeway we could definitely have with how the on-course person is handled versus how they're currently handled. So, whatever. I don't have to deal with that. Beaver State Fling, it's the only thing I care about now. This year.
Nobody cares about your input then. So, of course, congrats to Zach and his performance there again. Neither of us are shocked as to him performing well. So
he's great.
Good to hear and good to see. And who knows? This could spark a whole new integration of Zach, depending on where he feels physically and mentally and what he wants to take on. And speaking of which, I'll quickly sidebar to also getting surgery on her ankle yesterday or this morning, one of the two, was Sarah Hokum. And with that, Sarah Hokum is going to be in the booth this week. Next weekend for the Dynamic Disc Open. So I believe it's going to be Ian and Sarah Hokum in the booth. And of course, there's a timing to all of this with what event Sarah wanted to play or not. And then, when she could work her surgery in, and then in having the surgery and then being 10 or 12 days out from that, being able to be at the Dynamic Disc Open, but instead of playing, obviously being in a booth. So you're going to hear a different voice in that sense. And also, I think that's the weekend we're going to hear Ian and Jeremy Kohling in the booth at Dynamic Disc Open. So there was a thread I know posted within one of the Facebook groups saying, hey, where's Philo? You know, almost wondering if he was either fired or not doing anymore. And as I replied to that thread, I said, we have a set schedule at the beginning of the year. Of course, it can slightly alter, but for the most part, a schedule is set. there's various events, various teams, various things that all get worked in. Philo's obviously been on a couple of broadcasts this year, and then we're going to hear from him again. I believe the two events after the Dynamic Disc Open, or two weekends after, which would be probably OTB. I'm guessing he's in the booth with Ian for OTB will be the next time, because Champions Cup, then Dynamic Disc Open, and then the week after, or 2 weeks after that, the next event is, and that'll be OTB. So just throwing it out there for anyone that wants to know a little bit of what's to come. But it's all been planned out is really my point of that.
Yep. And for those of you that were wondering, yes, 100% Eagle McMahon is on the MPO.
Assuming he plays.
Feature card. Assuming he plays. He's scheduled to be on the feature card. I'm not going to spoil anything else because usually they do some sort of social media release. But I do see Eagle McMahon on the lead card or the feature card. Round one is not a lead card. So the feature card. And I would have bet my house on that one. that his comeback is going to be a storyline that they are going to want to talk about.
Reading on the board, Ray says, are players getting paid for stepping in for a one-off situation, presumably like a Zach?
Is that like $3,000 or $4,000 around they make? I think that's what I heard Zach made.
That sounds about right. Yeah. I'm sure he was. I can't say I'm sure. I would think he was probably compensated. I will say this out loud. If he wasn't, I also don't think that's crazy, only because I'm a first weekend trial basis for something in this type of industry, I don't think is crazy. However, I'm guessing they compensated him. But if they didn't, or compensated him in a lesser capacity,
that's what I was thinking.
That's probably also what happened. Is, hey, you know, we're gonna, you know,
our standard guys make this much. You're gonna make 50% of that because it's a first time. We're trying you out. You could suck. You could be great. We don't know. But it's opening the door. It's opening the door for you to get potential.
That's only a guess, though. I have no idea. Or he made $4,000 per.
I think it was $4,000. I don't know if it's
per round. Or, so $8,000 a day.
Yeah. Times that's usually. I heard that's the.
That's going. What I would have paid.
I heard that's the going.
I mean,
rate.
If he was on my.
If he didn't make that, I would definitely call Jeff Spring.
Philo is busy at Fish Mexico. Was that happening? I don't know. Why am I reading out loud? I like Hannah.
Let's wrap this up, in the Terry. Booth.
She seemed like she was prepared with notes. She certainly was. She had a different style.
We can get to some of this stuff in the after show.
Got free beer? Who got free beer? Wait a minute. He got free beer? I got to go. I'm doing this all wrong. It's Zach got free beer. Okay, guys. We appreciate you guys all for joining us tonight. The show's not over. No. Sounds like I'm wrapping it up, but I'm not. What we're doing is we're going to stand down for just a few moments. We're going to cut out of our regular show, and then we'll move into the after show after a very short break. The after show will consist of interacting with you on the board to answer any other questions or thoughts that you may have. And we may or may not talk about things that are golf or non-golf related. I have some very insightful takes on
probably the new not
Taylor Swift album release.
I did listen to the first song. Like I've never listened to.
There you go.
Gone on my way listening to Taylor Swift song.
And if it you popped want up all in my that YouTube and feed. More, it's in the after show. I really don't have any insightful takes this time, but we'll hear what Johnny has to say. So for Simon Lizotte, your champion at Music City Open, congratulations to him. Also, congratulations to our defending FPO champion in Kristen Tatar. We wish everyone the best this upcoming weekend at the PDGA Major, and we wish Simon and his family the best as they welcome another child into the world come Thursday morning. For Johnny V, I'm the Disc Golf Guy. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back with their after show. We'll see you then. You step inside the Smashbox.
Thank you to our $2 and above patrons. Your name is listed below in the credits. If you are interested in being listed as a producer in the Smashbox TV credits and supporting this and other fine podcasts, please visit patreon.com/SmashboxTV.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.